This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas, powered by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9, I'm Philip C, and welcome to The Breakfast Grill. Now, on today's Breakfast Grill, we are in conversation with His Excellency Dr. Peter Blomeyer, German Ambassador of Malaysia to Germany, celebrating Germany unity on the 3rd of October. Now, it's been 32 years, right, Doctor, since the East and West Germany were unified. So let's look at that time when the Iron Curtain fell. But the reality is, I think the Iron Curtain is up today, isn't it? But in a different form.
Well, you are right in a way. Let's recall how it was when we reached unity 32 years ago. That was an incredible event. We had 40 years of division of Germany. There was this insurmountable wall between East and West Berlin. There was also something called the death stripe between East and West Germany, with automatic firing ranges and a lot of missiles, land missiles there. And then all of a sudden, this what we called velvet revolution happened, a revolution where no blood was shed. People stood up. And they mounted onto the wall. They reminded the communist rulers of who was the true sovereign in Germany by the slogan, "We are the people." And that later changed to, "We are one people." That was the call for unity. And the communist regime somehow seemed paralyzed. And then it happened. Unity happened. Only 1 year later, from 1989 to 1990, we reached German unity. And that was a period of great excitement, of incredible joy. The people celebrated because they finally achieved freedom. The Iron Curtain went down, and also the peoples in East and Central Europe, they regained their freedom. So it was a singular moment in history. And if we look at what we have now, we need to recognize that our hopes have shattered. Russia at that time had been included in the development. It subscribed to democracy and rule of law, human rights, in the Charter of Paris. And it even became a guaranteeing power of the sovereignty and integrity, territorial integrity of Ukraine. Because at that time, Ukraine gave up on its atomic weapons and handed them over back to Russia. And all these hopes did not materialize, because then in Russia, a dictator assumed power, and he just wants to turn the clock back now.
So, I mean, we should talk about the Russian crisis and how it's creating so much division. And the reality, it's also creating division within the European Union. I mean, you're seeing so much differences of opinions within the European Union. I mean, in Germany, you have a center-left government coalition. You saw recently in Italy a shift towards a far-right government. Sweden has moved to the right. Do you think Germany is an outlier in terms of creating unity or pushing for unity in the European project then?
Well, I must say, I have never seen so much unity within the European Union than now caused by Mr. Putin's war. The European Union is united like it rarely was in the past. And that is because of what I just described, all our hopes to build up a system of peace, democracy, rule of law, have been endangered by this. Putin has shattered now this European architecture for peace. And that's why we came together. And yes, of course, we have a diversity of opinions, but that is normal for a democracy. And we need to discuss things, whether we tackle a problem from this side of that side. I'm not afraid of that. That's the essence of democracy.
Yeah, but patience is wearing thin, isn't it? Because this war has been prolonging for a very long time. People on the ground are struggling. And that's why you see a lot of people frustrated and asking, what are governments all around Europe trying to resolve energy security issues happening, right?
I think that people are worried. They are affected also by this war, but they are still standing strong because they know what is at stake. We cannot give up. We cannot tolerate this incredible act of aggression. And if you talk about energy, a few months ago we were worried about whether we would have enough gas in Germany to get through the winter. Now our gas reservoirs are filled up, more than 90%, and we are pretty sure that we will master the winter if companies and citizens act reasonably economically. And they have started doing that already. We have another problem now, which is inflation. Prices for energy and also for other commodities, for food, have skyrocketed. And companies and people are now struggling with that. But we also try to find answers on that. The German government has just announced last week what they called an interception umbrella, by which they want to spend 200 billion euro, yes, an enormous sum, on helping companies and also citizens in need to master now this crisis, so that we will prevent them from going bankrupt. So we are optimistic that we can cope with this crisis.
I mean, you talk about this 200 billion stimulus, which is incredible, but also the other actions that the German government is pursuing, right? They're nationalizing energy firms, you're putting price caps in place. Do you think the way to kind of get out of this solution is to break market reforms then?
Well, we need, of course, to become more resilient in many aspects. That is to say, companies need to diversify regionally and also sector-wise. And I think also this region, especially Malaysia, will benefit from that. We also need to get more resilient when it comes to energy. Yes, we have a crisis of energy now, but this will also give a boost to the renewable energies. We will all the faster adopt renewable energies. And in the mid-term run, I think we will even benefit from that.
And resilience in energy comes in your long-term plan called Energiewende, correct me if I'm wrong, the German translation of basically moving towards low carbon, where the intention really is to reduce greenhouse gas emissions by 80%, 95% by 2050 and 60% renewable energy target. But the question I have for you, Ambassador, is Germany regretting over its nuclear policy? Because for many countries all around Europe, they are shifting to nuclear, and it's a really interesting short-term solution, right, to secure energy security in the short midterm.
We have a discussion on nuclear energy in Germany, and some people indeed say that we should prolong with it, but very, very few people say that we shall return to nuclear energy in the long run. What we are discussing now is a prolongation of the operation of some nuclear plants, which were supposed to be shut off by the end of the year. They will now run, I think it's only two of them, they will now run until March. Some people say, let's have them run until 24. But there are few voices who say that we should return to nuclear energy for good.
So we move to coal. Does this delay your plans to move towards net zero then by 2050, as you transition inevitably or forced to move towards coal then?
First of all, I must say that we even have more ambitious goals than 2050. We want to reach carbon neutrality by 2045. We want to reach reduce our emissions by 65% already in 2030. And we have not lost these goals out of sight because of this war. Yes, we have to return now provisionally to coal, to coal-fired power plants, but that's only for a short transmission period after we will have absorbed this gas shock. And as I said, we will build out our renewable energy plants all the faster now.
Let's talk about this war, because that's a root cause to this energy security issue. As we've seen, Putin has become very desperate. Yes or no, do you believe Russia is sabotaging energy lines along the North Sea?
I'm not speculating about that. That is, of course, in discussion all around the globe. But I think we just would have to wait until the experts have examined that that place where it happened and give us some clues to it.
But you do agree that he is weaponizing energy lines, isn't it?
Oh, he definitely is, yes. He is waging a war of energy against Europe.
And so will the EU continue to provide further military equipment and support? Because you're seeing a bit of frustration that it's been slow going, isn't it? The US is putting a lot of pressure on the EU to accelerate the support of military equipment to Ukraine.
I think that also between the US and the European Union, there is a unity now, which we have rarely seen before. Also, NATO, which has been criticized hardly before, is standing better than ever before now. And all the decisions with respect to the support of Ukraine are carefully discussed and harmonized between the US and the European governments, especially the German government.
So does Germany support fast-tracking Ukraine's NATO submission then?
We think we have to handle this carefully. I think what we are heading for now is we need to support Ukraine so that we make it very clear that Putin cannot win the war. We have to support Ukraine financially, on humanitarian grounds, but also militarily, and that's what we do.
But do you think that you would basically accelerate the program for Ukraine to join NATO? Because Sweden and Finland have applied. Will they follow the same process, or will you accelerate it simply because Ukraine is in the front line?
With Ukraine, it's different than with Finland and Sweden. Ukraine is a nation at war, and this makes things much more difficult. We also have to deal with Russia. And the status of Ukraine was one of the reasons why Russia went to war, supposedly. Actually, we believe it is a war of aggression, an imperialist war, because we now also saw after these sham referendums that Russia annexed. It is not an annexation. They cannot annex it, these four regions. And I think that's what we have to concentrate on. We can, of course, understand Mr. Zelensky, that he tries to push forward also the accession to NATO. But I think this needs to be treated carefully now.
Putin's imperialist war of aggression in Ukraine, will the EU ever work with Putin's Russia if Russia backtracks from Ukraine?
I believe it is very difficult to imagine that anyone will still work together with Mr. Putin and his regime. But of course, Russia will be our neighbor forever. Mm. Eventually, we hope that things in Russia will change in a way which makes it possible to return to a cooperation. I myself have served in Russia for 2 years, and in Siberia I have met many very kind and considerate and intelligent people in Russia, and I'm very sure that they are as sad as we are about the situation in Russia, that they are also sad about Putin now having this partial mobilization, using their young men as cannon fodder. They are untrained. They have to go to war. This is an abominable crime against his own people, by the way. And I think we also have to see that many Russians are now opposing this war. So we should not exclude to return to cooperation once Russia has got rid of the system.
On The Breakfast Grill, I'm in conversation with His Excellency Dr. Peter Blomeyer, German Ambassador to Malaysia. Up next, how have Malaysian-German relations evolved? Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
Welcome back on The Breakfast Grill. We have with us His Excellency Dr. Peter Blomeyer, German Ambassador to Malaysia. And he's seen the hot seat as we celebrate German unity in a world that seems to be wracked with division. But, you know, Ambassador, let's just go back a bit to history, but shorter term, because, you know, we had you on The Breakfast Grill a year ago, and I remember you were the first guest to come physically to the studio. And we were reflecting on the challenges that you had in your first year in your role as ambassador. Then, now fast forward to today, you are in your second year. What are your impressions of Malaysian-German relations, and how has it changed between its first year here and your second year?
Yes, thank you for that question. Germany and Malaysia have enjoyed very cordial and friendly relations from day one of Malaysia's independence. We recognized Malaysia on the very day of independence, on the 31st of August in 1957. We were country number 7. And only 1 month later, we opened our embassy here. Just a few days ago, we celebrated the 65th anniversary of Malaysian-German relations, and they have been going strong ever since. During my first year here, of course, the pandemic and how to deal with it was topic number one. We had an exchange, how we could help. We discussed about delivery of vaccines. Germany has a company, BioNTech, which together with Pfizer brought one of the most efficient vaccines onto the market. And I think a large number of Malaysian citizens have also been vaccinated. With this, we were talking about how to intensify our cooperation in the field of health, and that was dominating the first year. Now, I can say we are a bit back to normal. And I think that the backbone of our relations are the economy. We have 700 German companies operating in Malaysia. Malaysia is our trading partner number one within ASEAN, and vice versa, we are number one for Malaysia in the European Union. So that is very strong. We have a Malaysian-German Chamber of Commerce with more than 400 members. It's one of the strongest in the country. We have four German business councils where the German business community is meeting regionally. So also institution-wise, we are quite strong, established here in Malaysia.
And I think, as you say, right, the backbone of this relationship is really economic. It's very trade-driven. The numbers you say, very clear-cut. I guess the question in my mind is, how do we move forward the relationship beyond just classic trade and economics, right? How do we build social cultural ties? How do we build, you know, relationships beyond just dollars and cents?
Yes, that is indeed my job description, which you're just mentioning there. I think that something which is really on our mind is the environment. The environment is a field where we have to intensify cooperation. We already have a cooperation in place, but we need to intensify it. We all are committed to the goals of the Paris Agreement on climate from 2015 to reduce our climate gas emissions. We have to fight the garbage flood. We have to fight the loss of biodiversity. And so I think that is a field of cooperation there. Germany has much to offer that. Malaysia knows this. And now we are fathoming out where cooperation is possible and between what institutions. We have, for instance, more than 115 university cooperations going on between Malaysia and Germany. I think that is also very strong. It's, of course, in technical engineering, but also in the field of environment and others. As for culture, because you explicitly mentioned culture, I think that we also have already strong ties, also personal ties. We have Malaysians who are translating German poems and German philosophers into Malay, and vice versa. Your foreign minister has been to Germany these days, and one of his wishes was to get to know the people from the Frankfurt Book Fair, so that Malaysia can also engage there more strongly. I would like to mention one more thing, which is very important to me, if you allow, and that is we have 1,600 Malaysian students studying in Germany, and I can only recommend especially Malay, young Malays and Malaysians to consider studying German, because our university system is largely free of charge. And even if you don't have a scholarship, at least you don't have to pay for university. But of course, the entrance card is good German knowledges of the German language. So it's worthwhile studying German.
It's worthwhile studying. And I was very tempted because my first employer was a German company. And I think the question about trade and economic is still very much in the minds of Malaysians. But I want to twist it a bit differently, because in Malaysia, we know the big names. We know the Siemens, the Bosches, the Brons. But the question is, where is the Mittelstand in coming into Malaysia? Where are the mid-cap German companies, which are the backbone of Germany's economy, right? They are the ones that are entrepreneurial, very innovative, right? What's stopping them from coming to invest in Malaysia?
But they are here. I just told you we have 700 companies, and the big brands which you just named, they are only a few. But also the backbone of our engagement here on the ground is small and medium-sized companies. There are a lot of champions in their field there, hidden champions we call them, because they are not so well known, but they are here. And I think that we are living now in a time where companies are adjusting their investments. They are rethinking where to go. And Malaysia is in a quite good position. It's considered a very good investment location because of a number of reasons. For instance, you have a good infrastructure. You have a strategic location in geography in the center of this region. You have a workforce with a good command of the English language. Mm-hmm. You have a functioning legal system. That's very attractive. You also now have exceeded RCEP and hopefully also soon CPTPP. This is making also Malaysia attractive as a hub in the region.
As you say, there are many ingredients, but the worry and looming in everyone's mind is, you know, that EU is likely to enter a recession next year in 2023. Do you think that's going to affect investment sentiment for German companies to invest here?
Well, my feeling is that investment is coming stronger because the companies are aware of the fact that they have to diversify regionally and also sector-wise. They look at Russia. The investment in Russia has completely stopped. With China, it's getting more difficult, and at least they are thinking of having a second leg. And then they focus on the Indo-Pacific, on Southeast Asia as the fastest-growing region in the world, and would like to invest here. And Malaysia has a number of good factors for investment. There are also some problems, of course, red tape, corruption, and also inequalities like from the Bumiputra policy. But all in all, it is considered an excellent investment hub, and German companies will continue to be present here.
And Ambassador, as we reflect on Germany's Unity Day, you know, it's very interesting that Germany's political climate is, you know, based on coalition politics. You know, you have this wonderful array of different coalitions all amassing together to make decisions. Any advice on a country trying to handle and manage the complexities of coalition politics then?
I think that you need to realize in such a system that a compromise is a good thing. It's nothing to be afraid of or to be ashamed of, but it is the essence of a coalition system, that you come together and compromise, and that different segments of society work together.
A compromise is a good thing, nothing to be ashamed of. That's all the time we have for today on The Breakfast Grill. His Excellency Dr. Peter Blomeyer, German Ambassador to Malaysia. I'm Philip C., BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, where unlimited potential begins.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.